Welcome to the Fair Parenting Podcast, where we cover people's stories, ideas, and the progress towards fair parenting.
Welcome to the podcast. Today, our guest is Brent Bowlby, a dad from Minnesota. He has a long and complex and difficult family law story. We discuss it at length. We're going to be covering it in more than one part. Part one today and part two is next time. He's a great guest and I hope you enjoy listening to his story, although it's so sad what so many parents have to go through in family court, and Brent's story is no exception. But he's a great guest. So without further ado, here we go. Today we have Brent Bowlby on the show. He's got a seven-year case and he'd like to talk about a wide range of topics to do with family court and related issues. It's going to be very wide-ranging, as I say. I look forward to speaking to him. So hello, Brent.
Good morning, or evening, I should say. How are you today? Thank you for having me on.
Oh, you're welcome. We've spoken a couple of times in messages over Twitter or X, and I still call it Twitter. But and so Elon Musk wouldn't like that. So hopefully he doesn't listen to the podcast. Although he's got 10 children, perhaps he should listen to the podcast.
Yeah, no kidding.
But
and he's got it worse than probably most men combined, but he can afford it. So
yes. So hello, brother, if you're listening, Elon.
Right on. Yeah. We've got your back, brother.
Yeah. Okay. So yes. So we've spoken a couple of times, messaging, and we go to a couple of the same spaces on Twitter. So I know a little bit about your story, but not a great deal. So it's pretty much open for wherever you want to take this. Do you want to start by telling us a bit about your background?
Sure. So just real briefly, I was born into a preacher's family. My parents were ministers. And so very early on in my life, we moved around a lot. My father was called a church planter. And so I moved probably 17 times before I was 16. And after that, I got emancipated, went to secondary school early, graduated early. When I was 18, I worked for IBM, 18, 19, worked for Boeing, 20, 21, Pillsbury. And then I was an entrepreneur for the last, for most of my adult life, started four or five different high-tech companies, did raising of venture capital for these enterprises. And so about every 5 years, I'd reinvent myself. Once married prior to what I today refer to my ex. So there was prior to my ex, another ex. And with my first marriage, I got married quite young to my high school sweetheart. Unfortunately, after 16 years, just being on the road and being an entrepreneur, it didn't really work well for our relationship, but we did produce three children. We never hired an attorney. We managed the entire divorce and everything else on our own. We always chose what was best for our kids. And I thought that was sort of like what happens when you get divorced. You put yourself, your own issues aside, and you just deal with what's best for the kids. So I have three older kids that are all in their late 20s, early 30s, and very much, in a professional, white collar type of a job. After I got divorced, I met my, what I consider or call my ex, and I was with my now ex for 13 years, and we produced three children, and those three kids are naturally born as two girls and a boy. Mm-hmm. And everything was great for a while, and then it was absolutely the worst nightmare of my life. So after about 13 years, unfortunately, our family broke up, and this is sort of where my nightmare really began.
Is there a big age gap, actually, between the you've got three children from the first marriage and three from the second? What's the age gap there between the children?
Sure. That's a great question. So 31, 29, 27 years of age, right in that area. And then my oldest, so I have, if you will, the do-over, and that is 16, 13, and 11. So a 16-year-old, trans male identified, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, how that happened behind my back without my knowledge or consent, and then a 13-year-old girl and an 11-year-old boy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I will say that my older children on weekends would come spend time with me, of course, and they would be with their younger siblings.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when a family breaks up like this, you know, it doesn't just affect, you know, one parent and the kids. It, you know, if there's older siblings like what my kids have, they miss them too.
Yeah. Okay. So did the problem start? You mentioned it was obviously at the end of the second marriage. Was it right away, or was it the process? Did you mentioned you didn't go to lawyers with the first one. Did you get pushed into that somehow in the second one?
Well, so after the first marriage, or after my marriage failed, it hit me really hard. And so I did what a lot of dumb men do, or sometimes women. And that is, you know, you do some dating and you do what you can to satiate the pain of your failed marriage and not being with your children. And so I ended up dating what I would, a woman who is younger than I am, by around 7 years. And she was a fun person to be out around. She didn't have kids. And while I was, you know, that executive working at that tech startup, it was, fun to have that distraction in my life, to sort of mask the pain. And so I did date on a rebound. I absolutely consider her a rebound. You could say what you can about people, but, you know, she certainly isn't the person today that I would have recognized when I first met her. Some of the things that she's done and caused, that level of pain and hurt, not just me, but more specifically my kids. It's like a person I never met before. But before I knew it, we had three kids and two girls and a boy. And then right after 13 years of marriage, I was in between work and we were kind of having a rough go at it. And so I felt like, you know, Minnesota was a place that I had lived for 26 years. After I was born here and I came back and I thought, you know, maybe perhaps rather than starting another business that's really takes a lot, of the family time, why don't I just look for a traditional executive job and just be, you know, 8-to-5 dad, you know, and she agreed. So in 2016, fall of 2016, we were supposed to move to Ohio as a family and just sort of like start over. Okay. She agreed, and I moved in August of 2016, and immediately she ghosted me and, like, wouldn't pick up my phone call or very rarely. And while I was out looking for homes, kind of preparing for my family to move with me or join me, she moved the three kids into her parents' place about an hour and 25 minutes away from where I live in Minneapolis.
Okay.
Into the countryside, into the countryside. So rather than join me in Ohio, she took that opportunity to move the children into her parents' house, into the countryside in Minnesota, in a county that's, you know, fairly sparsely populated. So my kids are now isolated, and all the while I was expecting her to show up. So that was pretty much the beginning of the journey. And then when you say, you know, when did the court stuff initiate, that happened in early 2017 when I got served papers from her after, you know, being told just about everything. Ultimately what I found out was, of course, she had a boyfriend, and this was just a good excuse to sort of break up with me without having to confront me. So that happened in 2016. And then the lawfare and everything else sort of started in 2017.
Okay, so it basically, you went to Ohio. Let me just see if I got this correct. You went to Ohio to look for a new family home, and then more or less instantly she moved into the sparsely populated area of Minneapolis, where you had both lived previously in near the city. She moved to a rural area.
That's what she did, exactly. So as soon as I moved out to Ohio, she moved out of our family home, mm-hmm. and then moved them about an hour and a half away into the countryside.
Yeah.
And then that made her available to basically be gone on the, you know, whenever she felt like it, because she didn't work.
Mm.
So she was spending time with this new man in her life. Actually, she knew him for quite some time, so it wasn't like a new man. Everybody was in on the secret but me.
Right.
So, you know, basically it was one of those deals where it was just really bad. Finally, then we get into some lawfare. And basically what happened was, and this happens a lot, you know, there is a way to keep men sort of wrapped under the axle of that vehicle. So you have to focus on more or less being on the defensive.
Yeah.
And oftentimes it seems like whoever gets the jump on the other person, whoever files first, is usually gets the leg up. And so throughout the fall of 2016, I was in Ohio, didn't know what the heck was going on. She wouldn't allow me to talk to the kids. There was a long period where I just wanted to make it work because I didn't want to have two broken families. And she was just either very, very coy whenever she would pick up the phone or quite frankly, most of the time she didn't. So I called a lot, tried texting her, just, you know, what the hell's going on? Where are my kids? Why aren't you here?
Yeah.
Not knowing anything. And then she went and saw a judge in her county, in the small county in 2017, and got what is called a harassment restraining order on me, or mm-hmm. an HRO.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's real common.
Yeah.
And HRO is different than a domestic violence charge. You know, like a restraining order, a physical restraining order. HRO is basically, you know, this guy texts me a lot and I'm being bugged by him and I'm afraid of him. And basically, you can lie. The barrier to entry you can get one. I tell people you can get a HRO on a ham sandwich.
Yes.
The judge, nobody does an inspection, or nobody does a like a investigation into, you know, besides I'm 10 hours away. I'm obviously not an immediate threat. But this was just, you know, so the judge wrote that I could speak to my kids, but I could only talk to my ex about things that mattered to the children.
Yeah.
And so that's how the lawfare began. And normally what happens is when you get an HRO, it's like you can't talk to your ex until you get to court next. So it was her way of controlling her narrative, where I couldn't ask her what the hell happened to our family. We broke up, but you know, I can't even ask you why.
Mm.
You know, and so that's how she started using the law against me. And unfortunately, I was living in Ohio and I get served this HRO when I come back and I have our first court date. And typically you can go and fight those HROs. Usually it's scheduled about 30 days out. So when I got served that HRO, I also got a court date that was like 30 days away. And so I did go to that, or I should say my lawyer didn't show up and defend me on this false HRO claim. I mean, it's pretty understandable if you move out of state, you're going to, and you don't know what's going on with your family, you're going to try to text them probably a little more than you did. Mm. And I would have hoped a judge would have understood that, but my lawyer, who said she'd take care of it, never showed up. So that HRO stuck on me.
Yeah.
So here I'm an executive, and I have a harassment restraining order on me.
Yeah.
And if you want to talk about destroying a person's, you know, reputation.
Yeah.
you know, it's just easier if you're looking for work and somebody sees that you have a harassment restraint order on you, they can just pass you up and go on to the next person because it's just easier. And who wants to, I mean, an HRO sounds kind of serious. It's like, it sounds like it's a domestic violence charge, but it really isn't.
Yeah, yeah. But people don't know. And this is the way they tar you with unfair labels, and people just don't know the truth unless they've been through it. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, that you're absolutely right. And so, you know, what happened was I spent the next 11 months after I moved to try to get back to Minnesota. And I ended up back in Minnesota on July 3rd, 2017. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that my lawyer said to me very early on was, Brent, make sure that you record everything. And I'm like, well, what are you talking about? And he's like, you know, your ex is making false accusations. She made a false affidavit on getting the HRO on you. Whenever you talk to her, quite frankly, whenever you talk to your kids on the phone or anybody else, record the conversation. And in Minnesota, we have, you know, surreptitious recording is okay as it's a one person consent state. So as long as I keep the recording device on, you know, my person, then I can record wherever surreptitiously wherever I want to record. So I started recording incessantly because I was really kind of like upset that my ex would lie like she was. And so from July 3rd, 2017, all the way for the next couple of years, it was really, it kind of felt like Groundhog Day over and over and over again, because what she would do is she would withhold the children. I'd get frustrated. I would file a contempt charge. She would retaliate with a harassment restraint order.
Yeah.
I mean, we went in circles like this, and I couldn't understand why. And then CPS got involved in 2019. So basically what happened was I saw my children in 2018. We had a wonderful time. We spent about 14,000 miles driving around in the car to adventures. So we literally every weekend and in the middle of the week, we would go out on basically fun little trips to do. And my kids were younger at that time. We were very close. I brought my fiance and her stepdaughter. So I was literally never home with my kids, not once.
Yeah.
So a lot of this is well documented. But my ex, after I threw my kids a 3-day birthday party in February of 2019, I dropped the kids off at February 24th, 2019. And that was essentially the last time I saw my oldest child. And I have only seen my two younger ones 22 weeks out of that time frame. So we're coming up here this February on, 6 years? And that since I've seen my 16-year-old. And it's been over 3.5 years since I saw my younger two, who today are 11 and 13. And it's all been just by not the courts not enforcing their own orders.
Yeah.
And so I have every right to see my children. I have co-legal custody, and I have the right to be informed and make every, you know, major decision with my ex.
Yeah.
And what I found out that during this entire time, she actually got CPS involved back in 2019, and they conspired back in 2019, November 19th of 2019, on how to essentially keep my children away from me. So from 2019 until basically this year, I can't understand why I keep losing in the courts. I can't understand why the courts are continually, you know, renewing HROs on me. And why aren't they following through and upholding my rights as a father? And, you know, and I don't, you know, use this word sort of tongue in cheek, but you get a little paranoid. It's like,
yeah,
I'm hiring all these lawyers. We should win easily.
Yeah.
And I'm losing every single time. Yeah. It's like, what the hell's going on with this?
Yeah.
And so I learned that everybody kept telling me that Minnesota's a mother state. So, I mean, but what I found out, which really infuriated me, in this county, they have a 600 person jail under and the courthouse and the sheriff's department and CPS DHS or DHS CPS and all the licensing bureau under one government center. And so everybody pretty much knows everybody in this small county.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, well, I had a bad reputation, obviously, because I brought four or five different contempt charges against my ex during this time that she wasn't following court orders. And the judge would order us to hire a new parental consultant.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Are you familiar with the whole parental consultant?
Is that something, well, we have something called CAFCAS in the UK. I wonder if it's similar, where they come along and assess the parents and make recommendations to the court. Would that be similar? Or we also have mediators where you chat to a mediator and try and work things outside of court.
So, yeah. So basically the way that it happens in at least Minnesota and many states is they'll have what's called a custody evaluator. And this is sort of permanent divorce decree. So, and that person just does an evaluation on your family. They typically would view you with your children over a period of time, maybe 8 months, 12 months. In my case, it went 2 years. And this person does the same thing with the other parent and how they interact with the children. And then they make a recommendation to the court. And in Minnesota, it's called the 13 best interest factors. And so they take into account, you know, things such as mundane as, you know, what parent is the spiritual, has a spiritual background, or maybe has a history of church going, yeah. Who would raise the church or who would raise the children in their religion. That goes to dad or that goes to mom, you know, those types of things. And then it gets down to the nitty gritty and who they recommend the children live, you know, who has full custody, full physical custody, and what parent has, you know, and then obviously co-legal. And then, but then with our particular case, the custody evaluator, I felt was very corrupt. After 2 years, I only spent 1 hour with the custody evaluator.
Yeah.
So quite frankly, you couldn't rely on a custody evaluator to make any informed decision on my case.
Yeah.
So instead, on August 7th of 2019, my ex is still withholding the children from the 24th of February. But on August 7th, 2019, I agreed to a stipulated order where we would bring in a parental consultant to manage my high conflict case. And what the parental consultant does is they're like a guardian ad litem almost. They're usually a lawyer with some psychology background on high conflict cases and family, family cases and children. And so my ex and I both agreed to hire a parental consultant to make all decisions that we can't agree on, and also set up the initial parenting time schedule. And they're so powerful, they're supposed to be able to have the power to even remove the children from one parent and place them with the other.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking to myself, great, let's do that. Let's take this out of the hands of a judge. Let's put this into the hands of a professional and let the professional make the decisions. My ex doesn't listen to me at all. She doesn't follow through on anything whatsoever. So I thought this is a great idea. I haven't seen my kids now for, you know, 10 months or 6 months, 7, 8 months at that point. You know, let's bring somebody in who can actually do something and, you know, basically force my ex. Well, our first parental consultant resigned after about 5 weeks, stating that I've been alienated. I've been the target of parental alienation by my ex. And her intransigence to follow through on any of the parental consultant's orders. Mm-hmm. Now, mind you, if we disagreed with the parental consultant, the only avenue that we had for getting the decision overturned was to take this back to family court. Yeah. So the parental consultants were terrible, quite frankly. They said they had all this power in the world, but they never ever flexed their own muscle, and they and my ex never obeyed. So on the first one, my ex went in and did her intake, and she was completely bombed out of her mind. Fast forward to today, I've had four parental consultants. The first one said that I am the target of alienation by my ex. The second one said she can reconfirm the first parental consultant's point that I am the target of alienation. The second PC said that my home is safe and my ex's place is toxic. Also said that you know, basically I deserve to be in a relationship with my children. But after my not being able to get my ex to really do anything, what else can they do? They're supposed to go back to court, but they don't. They just quit.
Yes.
And and then of course what my ex does is she retaliates and she goes right back and gets an HRO on me. And so she did that again this last October. And that will bring us up to sort of like where we are today. Excuse me. So what's happening behind the scenes, I want you to know, is my ex's meeting with CPS behind the scenes. So during this time from 2019 all the way up to essentially present day, she's meeting behind my back with CPS. And I actually have those through Discovery. I have those private meetings that have been recorded. And just to sort of give you the background, what was going on while I was fighting in court to just basically have anybody, you know, reinforce my parental rights, my ex was meeting with CPS and conspiring how to keep my children from me. And I had no idea. So for example, I have on November 19th of 2019, my ex meets with CPS, and my ex, of course, doesn't tell the truth. And the CPS agent tells my ex about these two nonprofits that they contract with that are just staffed by ordinary citizens, but they're really great people. And they're there for, you know, if my daughter was having a hard day at school, they would go to her school and meet with her in private. They could pick her up from home. And then God forbid, if dad ever comes out there to go pick up the kids on his time, all they have to do is call up one of these two organizations and they will send someone out immediately, pick them up and then put them in a hotel room for up to, you know, maybe a week or two. And that's the conversation that's happening with CPS and my ex. I couldn't believe it. I mean, that's against the law. You can't have a third party come and pick up your child without you knowing, first of all. Second of all, you can't circumnavigate what the court order is. CPS has to follow what the court order is and are not supposed to involve themselves directly in the middle of an actively managed family court case like mine. Thirdly, this county that they contracted out of is called Wright County, and it's the number one child trafficked county in the state of Minnesota. Sherburne County, where my ex is at, is actually, I understand, is the most corrupt county in Minnesota. So basically, my ex is setting up, you know, this whole network of, you know, people behind her who bought into her lies. And nobody ever came and asked me one time, but I did go and provide CPS hundreds of pages of documentation. I recorded everything. So of course I gave them a thumb drive with phone calls, with pictures and videos of my kids. And what I found out later is that they never once looked at the material. I gave them 14 affidavits from neighbors that they said that, you know, Brent's a great dad, and, you know, we would even have no issues with having our kids spend the night. They have it many times when his kids are over.
Yeah.
So, but they admitted they never looked at any of this, but they just kept coming after me instead.
Yes.
And I think that's a real common thing that happens as well.
Yeah. You've described it as being one of the worst areas where you unfortunately happen to be. It strikes me almost, you know, if I had my time again, you almost now need to, you know, people talk about in England, they talk about a postcode lottery for medical services because we have socialized medical system in England, and you can get treated very differently if you live in one area as opposed to another. Similarly with the state schools, some areas, some parents actually move to be in the catchment area of a certain school because if they don't, their children's going to get a worse education. I mean, it almost seems to me now that people need to consider where they live if they want to start a family. And there are, I know there are parts of America where they're much better than others. And obviously Britain is a hellhole as far as being a parent. If I had my time again, I would possibly look into where has the best family law, and I'd perhaps move there before I actually started a family. Sounds incredible and extreme, but maybe that's what people need to start doing, voting with their feet, you know. Shouldn't have to, it's crazy, but yeah.
No, I think you're right onto something. Minnesota is, I think, if it's not as equally as bad as California in terms of parental rights, which essentially means we have none. Yeah. So there, in the U.S., there's Oregon State, Washington State, California, and then the state of Minnesota. And we are by far the most liberal states. In fact, we, Minnesota, I'm not proud of this fact, but, you know, Tim Walz was from Minnesota, or is from Minnesota. He's our governor.
Okay.
So talk about a national embarrassment. But Minnesotans haven't voted conservative since 1972.
Right.
So, I mean, it's like and I was born here. And so, but I have to tell you, Minnesota hadn't even gotten bad except for the last maybe 5, 6, 7 years since, you know, the real liberal Democrats have taken over.
Right.
And then, of course, we had George Floyd riots here as well. So during, and then of course being hit with COVID, you know, we had a lot of students that were like most places, you know, learning from home. And so while my children were at home in the countryside, living with their grandparents, going to school during COVID at home, this is sort of when the indoctrination started happening between my oldest and the transition, my ex transing my child from a female to a male, and without my knowledge or consent. Basically, she could spend all the time in, up to 50 hours a week on the internet. And there were a lot of these groups that basically preyed on children who are on the autism spectrum, or not neurodivergent like I am. And then basically with this woke CPS, they helped basically hide my children and this fact so that I wouldn't have a say-so in the matter. And so during this entire time, here I'm fighting to get a relationship going with my children. But COVID's happening. The judge is not enforcing my parental rights. Seems like they're enforcing all the HROs that my ex puts on me, but none of my rights. And then on November 3rd, 2022, I go to court with another contempt charge against my ex. And my judge comes out and says, almost tear-eyed, tearfully-eyed, you know, like she was crying or whatever, like, "Mr. Bowlby, I'm so sorry. I know it's been years. You haven't seen your kids." And I just wanted to scream at her. It's your fault. You never, you've known all these years for 5 years. You've never enforced my rights ever. And she goes, I could write an order right now, but my last day is November 15th, 2022, and I won't be here to enforce my orders. So I would recommend that you just, you know, see a brand new judge that's coming in March. And or at that point, I didn't know it was going to be March, but that's what it ended up being. And and have this matter settled then. Well, what happened was, so my judge got fired, retired, because she was managing another family case exactly like mine, where, except it was reversed. The father would not return the daughter to the mother.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, this little 8-year-old girl named Autumn Hollow was murdered by her father and stepmother. And that's what caused my judge to essentially retire early. The new judge ordered us to our another parental consultant, the fourth one, and that's what sort of brings us up to today. So finally, I was supposed to see my kids this spring with the fourth parental consultant. Ordered all three kids to reunification, my ex essentially didn't bring my kids to reunification therapy. Mm-hmm. I did a podcast with another publication, and on October 27th of this year, that podcast went live, and I got and then I got a call that I was being arrested because this story. A true crimes podcast released released basically a story of what I've been going through. And then I got jailed on October 27th of this year.
Wow.
And because a journalist contacted my ex and my ex reported it as harassment, which is insanity.
Yeah.
You know, lawyers should be able to follow up on their sources. Mm-hmm. So basically today I am now fighting felony charges, and that could put me in jail for 5 years. Oh. So here I've been fighting for my kids. I haven't seen them in over 5 years.
Yeah.
And now I'm up against felony charges, and the court never took away my parental rights.
Mm.
So that's how bad it is in Minnesota. So when you say choose your state wisely, or, you know, I couldn't agree with you more. On the flip side, I couldn't, 10 years ago, I mean, with my first three kids, I mean, there's, it's night and day difference. Minnesota has changed so fast that it is almost unrecognizable.
Mm. I mean, the thing is, if they'd enforced your rights, none of this would have happened. they're to blame, really.
Yeah, nothing. None of this would have ever. You hit the nail on the head. I say that a lot, and I say that a lot. You know, if they would have just enforced the orders, none of this would happen.
Yeah. It's similar to my story in that, you know, I had 5 years where they just did nothing. You know, they had a judgment that the false allegations had been made against me. I'd been reported to police 17 times. The police said I did nothing. All sorts of, you know, attempted fraud, trying to alienate the children. These are all court judgments. I'm not making it up. But they did absolutely nothing to stop it happening. And in fact, they ended up funding the other party's legal fees, you know, taxpayer funds. So they then used those funds to, you know, run my life savings down for 2 years, and I couldn't fight anymore because I had no money. But the point being, they found false allegations as far back as 2019. So if they'd done something then, and my child was abducted in 2019 by the other parent. So if they'd, and again, it was done without court permission, or parental permission. So clearly that's wrong. Taking the child 3 hours away is wrong. It's not part of what in England is called parental responsibility. And it broke a court order because she was supposed to bring the child to see me, which obviously didn't happen. If any of that had been addressed, then my case would not have happened. It sounds like if they'd enforced your parental rights 5 years ago, your case wouldn't have. And I think this is a general fault of the system, is that the judges, they're too weak in the early stages of a case. They don't nip things in the bud. And so they just get worse. Either the parent just says, I've got to carry on fighting, and things get worse because they don't enforce the rights, or parents walk away, commit suicide, or whatever. But they really, really need to get hold of these cases early on, the judges.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, I think judges today, I think family court judges are the worst, quite frankly. And, you know, and I think what happens is they are overloaded themselves. And so they rely on third parties to do an independent study. And it seems like they're really, you know, especially in the law community, you know, lawyers are friends with judges. Lawyers are friends with other lawyers. They go to continuing education all the time. It's like, even though my major metropolitan area has maybe 3 million people, you know, most of the lawyers are connected to somebody, you know, so basically it's like what they do is they are negotiators. They're not really there to litigate your case. So I feel like everybody failed. My kids in this particular case, the judges didn't follow through. They didn't listen to the court stipulated professionals like the parental consultants or the reunification therapists. So when they, you're right, I couldn't agree with you more. If they would just simply enforce their court orders, none of this would happen. And if they, you know, here in the United States, there's this thing that's been sort of talked about for years, only implemented in a couple of states, but it's the presumption of a 50-50 custodial time. So each parent by de facto has 50-50. You know, I haven't seen my kids in almost 6 years, and only and even heroin addicts get to see their children. There's something really wrong here.
Yes.
Really, really, really wrong.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's a postcode lottery in Britain. a friend of mine told me of a story in her town where there was somebody from Eastern Europe had come to Britain, had some children, and he had made death threats against the mother. And he was also running a cannabis farm, I believe. He was a heavy drug user. And he lived in a place with four other men where they were basically dealing drugs, is my understanding. I don't know these people. This is just what's been told to me. And but he got 50-50. You know, the judge, all of this was known in court. 50-50, no problem. Meanwhile, you know, the likes of me and many, 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 many other men and women, it's not, you know, I think men get a raw deal, but I've heard of horrendous cases with women too. I think this family court needs to be fixed for everyone. But
I don't disagree with you. I think that you're absolutely right. I think I mentioned early on that Minnesota, I was told not just by one person, but, you know, by everybody. And by everybody, I mean sheriff's deputies, police officers, CPS officials, and you name it, everybody in between, that Minnesota is a mother state. So, but you're not wrong. This isn't just unique to male or you know, fathers or mothers. But, you know, basically what you're finding is this gatekeeping technique to keep your kids from you that then turns into parental alienation and deprivation of parental rights.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, by the time that happens, it seems like the court is designed to take five to 7 years to arrive at something, and you're going to be bankrupt by then.
Yes.
And so it does not encourage keeping families together at all. In fact, it's just the opposite. It's ripe for abuse. And I, you know, quite frankly, I think if any parent withholds children from the other parent with absent any, physical evidence of domestic violence or concrete evidence of drug use, etc. You know, there is no reason. And I think that the mothers or fathers who are withholding the kids are obviously suffering from some severe mental defect. And, you know, we both had in-depth psychiatric evaluations done. And, There's no way in the world that the court doesn't know what's happening in my case.
Yeah.
So I will say that facing these felonies, I did go to my first hearing, and because it's a very small community, because I've been doing this now for 7 years, they disqualified every court officer. So the crazy thing is they brought back my judge out of retirement. She's now a senior judge to be the judge in my felony case.
Okay.
But on my first date of hearing, they all got disqualified. So the judge they brought back got fired, or got released from my case again. So hopefully this will be better, because they ruled against me for basically, you know, it's because they wanted to keep the kids in the state. There was ideological issues where the woke CPS agents wanted to keep my daughter, wanted to keep me basically from all three of my kids. Mm. So my ex could trans my daughter without me knowing. And plus they get paid. It's about money. You know, they make money on all these children that they are having to, quote unquote, manage. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, family law is not only corrupt, it's a humongous business.
Yes.
You know?
I mean, I had people, when my case started, I had people tell me that, and I just couldn't believe it, and I didn't want to believe it. But, I mean, it's hard to find ways to say that's not true anymore. As I said in one of my recent episodes, you know, lawyers and barristers and solicitors and judges are, you know, some of them are, they're not as bright as we're led to believe when we, you know, growing up, they've got a lot of prestige attached to them. I think some of them are very bright, some of them not so much. But with the ones who are, obviously I'd say, you know, they've got above average intelligence, these people. And you just think, well, can you not find a better way to make a living? You know, you've got options. You know, there's other industries you could go into. Why are you doing this to families? And I can't find a reason other than they just haven't got, they're just not wired like your average person. But I think it would be interesting if somebody ran a study on that, actually looking at psychological reports of lawyers. But I don't know.
They'd probably be highly narcissistic, is what I would think.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that took me a long time to get used to, actually, because, you know, I've had lots of lawyers. And because I was a serial entrepreneur in the tech industry, I had several lawyers. They're all business lawyers. They were paid to, if I had a harebrained idea, they were paid to make sure that my harebrained idea was legal. Right. And to tell me if it wasn't, and most of the time, you know, it had to do with licensing or whatever. It doesn't really matter. But in the family court system, you know, I sort of expected that same level of professionalism where logic rules the day. And in fact, logic has very little to do with anything related to family court whatsoever. Yeah. It's so subjective, and it does have to be taken down and reformulated. And I'm not quite sure how that's going to happen. You know, some people are saying, oh, you got to sue judges and hold them accountable. I've been taking a little bit different approach. I I've had plenty of lawfare used against me. It's ruined my reputation. I've got to deal with that.
Yeah.
I have a trial coming up soon. January 15th is the next court hearing. You know, I could go to jail for 5 years for basically doing really nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. No, I mean, it's not even like I yelled fire in a movie theater, you know, in this case, what I'm doing differently is, you know, I'm going to the boards, the licensing boards in Minnesota and every state. Probably they have that in the UK as well. Like, for example, the Minnesota Board of Social Workers, and that they have, they're a very powerful board. They can investigate notices of wrongdoing or complaints of wrongdoing by one of their licensed social workers, mm-hmm. and then they can take corrective action against them. and depending upon the level of, I mean, they can even be having their license removed. And also therapists, my kids have had therapists that CPS forced me into having. Only later on have those therapists say during a court hearing or trial that they were not qualified to handle my children's needs. So, you know, filing complaints and trying to remove the licenses of these so-called professionals is one tactic. So I'm going that way because, you know, it's not enough just to replace judges and you know,
yes.
you've got to replace all of these bad employees. You know, CPS shouldn't lie to you. They lied to me badly. Mm. I mean, not only did they lie to me, I recorded it.
Yeah.
I have concrete evidence. They're not supposed to lie to you. They are supposed to foster a healthy relationship between the family, not create barriers
yes.
to that family. They have a code of ethics that they need to comply with.
Yeah.
And certainly they broke state and they broke my due process or equal protection clauses as well. So, you know, they've done some really horrific things. And so they, you know, when they did the same things to this other mother, she sued the county for $30 million. You know, she had a child who died. Mm-hmm. They settled it quietly, left the court and she left the county. So here am I, they have blocked me illegally from seeing my kids for 5-6 years. They've got an investment to try to put me away to jail, quite frankly, to shut me up.
Right. Yes.
And so I don't know how much of what they're doing is retribution. Because no other county would even allow an ex to put an HRO on a person like me. And, you know, I mean, there's no danger. Anybody could know that you can't deal with terrorists. And when your kids are kidnapped, you're not going to be, this is what I think I would tell most people who are in my situation. You know, if you show any level of anger, you're automatically assumed to be guilty.
Yes.
But the reality is that if your kids are kidnapped, I don't think you're a human being. I don't think you're a real person if you don't get angry.
Mm.
You know, there's movies made. Liam Neeson is in several of them where he has a kid that's kidnapped and he's, you know, flying around the world and killing all the bad guys to bring back his daughter and everybody's clapping and cheering.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen that one.
You know, but here, if you show any level of emotion, you are considered to be the aggressive person and, you know, the wrongdoer.
Yeah. And again, this is quite in common in a lot of countries. It's so odd that they all act like this.
They really do. And there's a great Harvard study that's out. It's being peer reviewed, I think, right now, but it's easily accessible on the internet. It's called Anger Damns the Innocents.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes into the psychology of basically how people perceive others when there's a presumption of guilt or innocence assigned. Mm-hmm. So they did a really interesting study with four different scenarios. And they each scenario had a setup where they were accusing an individual of some sort of wrongdoing. In one case, it was, you know, an individual worked for an office and a computer was stolen. And what they did is they had three suspects and they all played the three different body parts. You know, one was real quiet, denying that they stole anything. The other one was just sort of nervous, jumpity, you know, I didn't steal anything. The third was mad as hell. F no, I didn't steal it. I can't believe you're even, you know,
yeah,
suggesting I stole it. And like 76% of the time, the person who was angry was the one that was found guilty but was in fact innocent. Mm. So it works. You know, and even when I was working with CPS and they accused my kids of being suicidal and it was like my fault, I got angry and it was like, it's not my fault. How dare you say that?
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, if you talk to us this way, you know, you must talk to your kids that way. I mean, this is the circular arguments that they use.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's sort of what's what's been going on now.
It's crazy.
So I've been sort of fighting this whole battle, you know, against wokeness, against, you know, these CPS rogue CPS employees, a corrupt family court system, and you know, and looking at time for trying to, you know, see my kids and just be a good father that I always was. So, and I know that there's a lot of fathers and like you said earlier, a lot of mothers in my situation, and there's not a lot we can do. And if anything, you know, I don't know if somebody had a crystal ball and said, look, in 7 years, you won't be working much. So you're going to be burning whatever cash you have saved up for retirement. And then you're going to pay out the nose for every lawyer and you're going to end up bankrupt.
Yeah.
You know, being, you know, middle-aged and essentially unemployed, I'd probably say, I don't know if I'd do anything different because what wouldn't you do for your kids? Yeah. But this is the true reality today. I don't know. I got to tell people, I don't know if it's worth, it sounds terrible, but it's like, I would do it again, but it's like, I don't blame men or women who can't.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to, if you got to take care of yourself first, you know,
yeah.
I didn't.
Yeah. I've heard of people that have walked away to preserve their own health. And yeah, I mean, however people get through this, I'm not going to criticize anyone. I'm not very good at self-care since I've been in the family court, but it's something I've got to look after a little bit more going forward. It's very difficult because you're focused on your child all the time, but an important part of them is you being there. So, you know, and I've heard of people talk about critical illness happening to people in these situations, you know, the stress, years and years of stress and trauma could result in a heart attack or cancer or anything like that. And I always used to be really, really fit, you know. I used to run a lot, do half marathons. I did a marathon. I used to be in the gym, you know, most days per week. But I've got to get back to that a little bit, and we all have to. And it's so difficult when you're dealing with court papers and visitation and false allegations, all this sort of stuff. You can lose sight of the basics of self-care.
I think it's really easy. You're right, for sure, to lose sight of self-care when you're dealing with deep emotional grief. And I can only speak on my own behalf, but I do speak to a lot of other parents, but and it does seem, you know, very similar. You know, you're living in your own sort of private hell. Yeah. Because, you know, a lot of people see you living in this hell, and let's face it, nobody would want to live here for very long. Mm-hmm. But it's like when your children are being kept from you, whether parental alienation or kidnapping, I think they're both the same. Gatekeeping, maternal gatekeeping, kidnapping, parental alienation, sort of all at the same root, yeah. Same thing. When that happens to somebody, you know, people, what I find is that your own family members, they get tired of having you fixate on the fact that you don't have your kids. And it's like, well, what do you mean? If you don't have your kids, people go nuts. Yeah. People go nuts. Except if you're in the family court and you're not seeing your kids, then you're expected to not go nuts.
Yes, yes. It's incredible.
I mean, it is so backwards in thinking that, and I understand it. So it's like you can't even really have this discussion with many people. So when you and I get the opportunity to talk, you know, in a forum like this podcast, we can talk about these things a little bit deeper. But, yeah. You know, because quite frankly, no, I mean, it's a small club and nobody wants to be in club hell, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's why I do make myself available to a lot of men, because it's like we all suffer almost like the same fate. Yeah. And you're right. Keeping healthy and looking after yourself is really important. I think it's tough for some parents, to maintain objectivity. You know, I had family members tell me flat out, if I were you, I would, you know, they'll come back when they're 18.
Yes.
And then, you know what, I did research and it's like, I hate to break it to you, only about 5% of the kids come back after after that age. So if you don't, maybe between 5 and 15%. So maybe if you do nothing, you know, you've got a 15% chance at seeing your kids again.
Yeah.
If, you know, but, you know, if the court doesn't enforce your court orders and you're not seeing your kids, you're going to end up in that same space anyway, except this time you're going to be bankrupt. You know, so do you want to be bankrupt and not see your kids, or do you just not want to see your kids? Because that's the way the laws are set up today, it seems. And so I talk to a lot of fathers. I have a father right now on the East Coast living out of his truck. And he's almost the identical situation to what you described yourself. And quite frankly, in my case as well. So there's a lot of fathers, some mothers as well, but this is what normally happens to a lot of fathers. It's hard to walk away. But if fathers do, they just have to get away for a while, take care of themselves. I certainly understand. I would never, again, like you, I would never judge anybody, because this is really hard. And I have the added benefit of trying to deal with the transing of my daughter behind my back.
Yes.
And the health implications that has, and how I'm going to deal with that as well. So, I mean, I got a lot of complex issues I'm dealing with just through the fact that the state has not enforced my rights to be a parent.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there seems to be quite a lot of, well, I've read a few stories recently in the States where parents, basically schools or courts have taken the transing of a child away from the parent, you know, the decision making there, or even kept it a little bit secret. The story we're reading about this morning. And then obviously there's one at the moment, Jeff Younger in California. I think he lives in Texas and his child's in California, and he's been, a judge has ruled that his child can be transed without him having input to that. I mean, it just sounds insane.
Yeah, you're right.
Again, they're doing things that are not reversible. So why are they, you know, why are some of these judges and schools not being prosecuted? Why are some of the public bodies not standing up and prosecuting these people? If the parents are unable to fund that, why aren't some of the, you know, surely some of the public services must feel this is insane too. It's just an incredible time that we're going through. The flip side of that, just to be a bit more positive for a second, is what's happening in America now with the way things have changed in November. I don't want to get into the politics, but you know, this idea of the Elon Musk's Doge unit, and I think he's, you know, he's going to rip the government to pieces until it functions. And I think what he's doing there could. I heard somebody say it yesterday, and I can only agree. What happens in America is going to change the world, and I think there's scope there for the family courts to be part of this. And I don't think they're going to be able to hide away from Doge. I think that big changes are coming. Already we've seen stuff like you can't, you know, they're not going to allow men to compete in women's sports in America. And all this, the tide seems to be turning. And we can only hope that this will reach the family courts and the transing of kids without parents say so. And we may be on the cusp of brighter times.
Okay, that's part one of Brent's story. Please join us again next time for part two.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Please join us next time.